Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Send my corpse to Avanti West Coast. It's VGC, a video game podcast with me, Jordan Midler, Chris Scullion, and Ethan Lawrence. This week, The Last of Us TV show may have found its abbey, and Ethan Lawrence is taking over the BBC. But first, how are we doing, folks? Ethan, welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me once again.
You're welcome. Now that you're a big shot, big prime time boy, big BBC, as important to the BBC as Doctor Who, do you have to take yourself more seriously now, or can you still make stupid jokes on this podcast?
Well, I'm here, aren't I? Yeah, despite being a big BBC One primetime hotshot, I still have the full autonomy.
This is like when Obama went on
jokes with you guys.
Good. This is when Obama went on Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis. You know,
this
you
is are exactly Obama. The same as that,
and the fact thing. That. You have the personality of someone that would drone strike civilians. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing well now. Now that the barbs have started already, I'm doing okay. I'm actually close to death, Jordan. But
good.
I'm just tripping like a tripper. I'm carrying on. Like a mild chest pain has got me all but convinced that it's time to renew the will. But it's all right. I'm doped up with various tablets and I'm ready to go.
Look, all I'm going to say is don't rest with Dolph Ziggler, because that's how you find yourself slumping at the commentary desk during this broadcast, and then the rest of the podcast will have to be done in silence. So,
that in mind.
Can you ID that hoodie? Because it looks nice, and we always get comments on your clothing.
Jet Set Radio, I believe it's Insert Coin, but I'm not entirely certain. I'm sure it is. Order a size up.
Congratulations. Congratulations on the second mortgage you took out to afford anything from a Insertcoin.
Thanks very much. I'll always wait for the sale.
Yeah. The thing is, if you wait for the sale, it's like, oh, do you want PlayStation pyjama trousers that are an extra small or 5XL? Yeah. It's like,
or do you want that Yakuza jacket that you would never wear in public because you get knifed?
Yeah. Here, to be fair, I have a very nice PlayStation bomber jacket, which I believe is from Insertcoin. It might have been from PlayStation themselves, but... And it's one of the few things in this life I actually paid for. So
I do like the vast majority of their stuff, to be fair. I've just got normal person's wages, so I just this don't is have many of it.
Come on, mate, we're games journalists. We're paid fucking
exactly. That's what I meant.
They recently put out. This isn't an advert for Insert Coin, although it could be if you want to. They recently put out big God of War Ragnarok blankets that are like tapestries that look really nice. Anyway. Mm. Not sponsored. Advertising standards agency. Ethan, very briefly, we'll talk about it later, but why have you darkened our door this week of all weeks?
I've come here to use your platform to promote myself.
Good.
Sort of a parasitic relationship that we have. essentially, I've got a BBC One primetime drama coming out this Sunday, and I'm shitting myself over it. It's probably the most exciting thing I've ever been in. Sunday at 9 p.m. Boat Story on BBC One.
BBC One, Jesus.
The proper one.
Yeah.
Boat Story. I never thought they'd be remaking Rosie and Jim.
I play Rosie.
What is a synopsis, please?
It's a story about a boat.
Good. That's all you need. In the TikTok generation, that's all I need to know. Flick onto this video. Did you know this boat? And then that's it.
But yeah, it's a sort of crime drama thing. Daisy Haggard and Patterson Joseph find a boat that's full of cocaine, and they decide to try and fence it, and then hilarity ensues.
Mm.
I play a bumbling police officer, as you can imagine, because why not? But yeah, Boat Story, it starts on Sunday at 9 p.m. on BBC One, then it's on Sunday, Monday, and it also drops in its entirety on iPlayer. So check it out!
Mate, I actually will.
Patterson Joseph, as in Peep Show's Patterson Joseph. I just looked this up.
The very same.
Mr. Alan Johnson himself. I don't know how you could... See, that's the thing about you being an actor. You would... Wait. Sorry, I'm literally just going through the Wikipedia on this. Joanna Scanlon's in it as well.
Yeah, she plays my mum.
Terry Coverley from The Thick of It plays your mum. Oh, mate. This is
the first time Jordan's ever been excited about anything I've done.
And it also sounds like the worst playground insult as well.
Your mum is Terry Coverley. Anyway.
This is the second time in my career that Joe Scanlon's played my mum. She is typecast in that regard.
Mate, I might get you to send her a wee DVD to sign. Anyway, this is a video game podcast. Let's talk about British actors later on in this program. Story number one, and one that will cause no problems to anyone on this earth, especially if you've got an AI profile picture, Baldur's Gate 3 and Alan Wake 2 lead the Game Award 2023 nominations. Baldur's Gate 3 and Alan Wake 2 are both up for 8 prizes ahead of Marvel's Spider-Man 2, which is up for 7 awards. All 3 are up for Game of the Year alongside Resident Evil 4, Super Mario Bros. Wonder, The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom. Before we get into the highlights from the full list, Chris Scullion, the hot button topic, not that one, the other one, should Resident Evil 4 be eligible for the Game of the Year, considering it is a dirty remake?
Yeah, why not?
Okay,
I mean, it's a remake, sure, but it's like it's not like a remaster. I don't want to get into this again because it's something that Andy brings up quite a lot, like what's a remake and what's a remaster, but it's clearly not just the original game with upscaled textures. It has been rebuilt. So I think it counts again as legitimate. I suppose an argument to be made that other games could be in there instead of it, but it's certainly a good game and I don't begrudge it being added to the list.
Here's the thing. I think the things that make Resident Evil 4 worthy of this list weren't present in the original, so the changes to gameplay, how good it looks, like the little bits and pieces that they've done, it's not just a straight, it's not like that Super Mario RPG that they've just put out where it's like straight up fresh coat of paint. If that had been nominated, I think that would have been a bit of a piss take, but I think people are going to get emotional about it because it's an older, it's a remake, and in a year where games like Street Fighter 6 missed out and Diablo 4 missed out and like a few other big hitters. It's a bit unfortunate. Ethan, do you distinguish between a remake and a remaster? Do you think this belongs on a list of the best games of 2023?
I think, well, so for the remake remaster one, I think you've nailed it perfectly with the Super Mario RPG and the discussion about that. It's clear playing Resident Evil 4, it's not the same game. I mean, it is the same game, but it's not the same game.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's... you know, everyone loves the original Resident Evil 4. I don't think you'll find a gamer of any age who, you know, at least from that period, who wouldn't cite it as one of the best for the PS2 or the GameCube or whatever they played it on. As for should it be eligible for an award, I'm with Scullion. Why not? Like, it's a good game. Like, there doesn't seem to be any harm. And like, in terms of cultural impact, like, you know, Capcom have been on such a run of it recently, especially with what they've been doing with Resident Evil. It's nice for them to get that nod. I mean, is it going to win? Probably not, but, you know, it's nice to see it represented there.
Imagine it did. Imagine it
Oh, my God.
An absolute shit show.
Then I think some people might be justified in being a little cross.
Just a wee bit.
I think it'll be a bit of a stalking horse, to be honest, in this list. Like, full disclosure, VGC is part of the voting jury because we're a very important outlet and people care about what Big JJM thinks. I think based on the Game of the Year list, which is Alan Wake 2, Baldur's Gate 3, Marvel Spider-Man 2, Resident Evil 4, Mario Wonder, and Tears of the Kingdom, I think basically all night you'll hear the words Baldur's Gate 3 over and over and over again, apart from in a couple categories where you'll hear The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom. I think this is going to be an Alan Wake 2 robbery. I think it will win in certain categories, like maybe it'll get narrative, it should get score and music, it should get
at the same time Alan Wake 2 is a very journalisty game, and it seems to be one of those games that a lot of people like to champion, and given that a lot of the jury, not all the jury but a decent chunk of the jury, is made up of the game's media, I think Alan Wake might actually do quite well because it's one of those ones that the press sometimes like to kind of champion and go, this is the game, so it might actually do okay. I've certainly heard more of them talking about that than Baldur's Gate, but I appreciate that Baldur's Gate has also got a pretty hardcore following as well.
and Alan Wake, we were all reviewing it the week that we had to put our nominations in. So I think that's also a reason why it did incredibly well.
Yeah. I think we'll all agree that the real controversy is Max Demon 1 Mazanoff being nominated for Best Esports Athlete.
Look, I wasn't going to bring it up because I thought it was a bit of a tenuous. I thought it was a bit of a tense situation going on. But in a world where Quackity is nominated for Content Creator of the Year, you're telling me you're backing Quackity?
I'm just more surprised that JD Gaming has been nominated for Best Esports Team. Obviously moving on from the JD Sports range.
They've had a terrible year. They've had a relegation battle. They're getting Big Salmon and they're getting nominated Best Esports Team. I personally hope that Paco Hydra, Rusewise, wins.
This is going to get me into trouble from the kids. What is best esports coach? What's it?
It's the guys that stand behind the Valorant players and go, "Let's go, bro! You shot him in the head. Let's go! Shoot that guy in the head! Shoot that guy in the..." I don't know why he's like a GTA 3 NPC,
a mob boss. This is my ignorance shown, and I'm not like pretending to be above it, but like I don't understand what an esports coach actually does.
Also, all these teams sound like they're part of the XFL. Who's the Florida Mayhem? Does he hate me play for the Florida Mayhem? Yes, this is the only one of these categories that matters to me is Content Creator of the Year, and I hope People Make Games, aka Young Chris Pratt, wins because he deserves it. He's a good boy and he does more actual journalism than a lot of these actual journalists kicking about. Ethan, this award show is typically about 3.5 hours long. We know because we have to sit and watch it for the news of Hideo Kojima's new trainers or whatever. What do you think of the Game Awards generally? How could they be improved? And what do they do right? Because I feel like they get slagged a lot. I think Keighley does a better job than anyone else in this position would be doing than now.
Oh, well, I always enjoy the coverage from Video Games Chronicle after Thank the you. Fact because I'm not watching that shit. it's too long. No, it's you are right. I mean, like, you know, for all that you can throw at Jeff Keighley, he's a one-man marketing machine for the video games industry. And like, you know, it shows in the fact that so many companies are willing to work with him to, you know, for the Game Awards to be the game adverts. Mm. And you know, that's not nothing. Like, you know, wherever you think of it, it's, you know, it's a pretty big coup. I mean, you know, this is very much, I mean, I did an analogy about it the other day. I wasn't really sure about it, but like, you know, the Game Awards feels like the Oscars to the Golden Joysticks, Golden Globes. And I do sort of wonder if the parallel works in terms of who wins as well. Because the Golden Joysticks, I think, will probably be a good sort of sense of where it's all going to land. I mean, you know, obviously that was a Baldur's Gate 3 sweep. And I'm with you, Jordan. I do think it's going to be Alan Wake 2 Erasure. But for a game that, to be fair, was very good.
Baldur's Gate 3.
Yeah.
It's very good apart from that combat system, which is absolute dog meat. But
we've spoken about that and you lack the skill. That's your problem.
I don't. I just give me an AK-47, you know? Yeah. I always think people moan about Keighley, right? But see if he was to disappear off the face of the earth and someone else was to take it up, it would be a decade before he even got to Keighley level. It'd be the first couple of shows would be so embarrassing. One thing though, he better have a proper security team.
I was going to say they need to put an electric fence around the stage.
Didn't you give him an AK-47? Because honestly, man, it's getting scary. Like when Bill Clinton Donnie came up. It was like funny and a meme and stuff like that. But when two like grown guys jump up on stage next to him, it's no good. It's like,
it's bad that it keeps happening.
Yeah.
Like, you know, one, you could phase off as a mistake, but two, you're getting dangerously close to a pattern there.
Yeah.
You would have thought after the first one, it would have been like, right, we need to make sure, like, get first thing, when we start the planning for the next one before we do anything, lads, let's get the security sorted because we all know what happened last time. So for it to happen again has to be concerning because it's like, so now what? Because that's twice now.
They also need to do the thing, they need to start doing the thing the WWE does where if someone that's not meant to be on screen comes on screen, they just cut to the crowd or they cut to something else. Like every time it's happened, there's been like this long extended shot of it and that's how it becomes like a big thing. But
maybe we should just put Jeff Keighley in a bubble wrap tuxedo. That'll probably fix it.
He always dresses
that's
well.
That's a moment for the internet, isn't it?
I love internet moments. That's a TikTokable moment, bro.
Absolutely. That is grist for the content mill, lads.
Yeah. The Game Awards are on December 7th. This isn't an actual full story, but Larian, Baldur's Gate 3 makers, tweeted that they'll have a world premiere of when they announce when the release date is for Baldur's Gate 3 at the Game Awards. £100 it's available now on Xbox.
The Xbox One, yeah definitely.
£100. Yeah. It's the end of this show. It's ready to go. However, Jeff, if you're listening, you've appeared on this podcast, so, and you've got no much to be doing now, so give us a Hades 2 early access available now, mirroring the release of the original Hades, because it's been a year since it was announced and no much has been said about it. So
I cannot wait for Hades 2. Yeah. I am so excited.
That's a proper game, man. That's a game for the boys.
Oh, yeah.
Last year, the announcements were actually pretty big. Death Stranding 2, which obviously he's Bezzy's with Kojima, so I wouldn't be surprised if we got a new trailer for that, and that's maybe like a late next year game or something. Ken Levine's new game, Judas, which is... Someone pointed out on Twitter that since Bioshock Infinite came out before GTA 5, we got news on GTA 6 before we got to actually play Ken Levine's game following up Bioshock Infinite. Yeah. We also got Hades 2, that Bayonetta prequel, and Armored Core 6. So the standard of announcements is pretty big. Also, I feel like, well, early 2024 is pretty stacked. Late 2024 is a wee bit empty. Are you expecting that tier of announcement, Chris? Or is it kind of one big, a couple of small, two big?
I think one big, a couple of small. I think this year's been ridiculous. And there will be more. I know like the back half of 2024 looks pretty dead just now, but we're going to get lots of stuff. There'll be announcements at the start of next year, I would imagine. This year was an anomaly because everyone was catch up after COVID, so we just got like 3 years worth of games in one 3 month period. So I think it'll go back. You'll get a big one in a couple. Keely, I noticed, has been kind of trying to temper expectations again, but he does that every time. I think he knows the script by now that he's going to get abuse no matter what. Like they're going to announce every big game imaginable, and you'll still get someone going, "What? No, yeah. Doom 6. And so we'll see. Like whether I think there'll be a couple of decent announcements. I'm not expecting E3, but I think it'll be fine.
Me too. I think it'll be solid. I mean, he's got the pool. He generally gets everyone on there.
As long as there's like 40 minutes worth of musical performances, I'm happy.
I swear to God, right, this isn't a spoiler for Alan Wake 2, but there is a musical performance in that game that would fit so perfectly on the Game Awards stage, and I'd be shocked if he hasn't got the actual band who are featured in live action in the game to play it. And if he does, I'll take full credit for it because I tweeted it at embargo break, because you know that's what we do. It's like the old days when I used to get platinum trophies before games were coming out, and I'd sync them to PSN profiles straight away, so I would have it first, and people would comment like, "How have you got the game? How have you got the game?" Journalist privilege, mate. Journalist privilege.
Drunk with power.
Drunk, not just with power, brother. Story number two. The Last of Us Season 2 may have cast its Abby. According to a report from entertainment reporter Jeff Schneider, he claims that Caitlin Dever is in talks to take on the role of the character. If you're not aware, Caitlin Dever was in Booksmart, which is a fantastic film, and no one
which
will
you
see
obviously haven't seen because you don't watch films.
I love Booksmart. I've seen Booksmart like five times.
Oh, here
times.
We go. Yeah, oh, so we've seen one film.
Booksmart is a tremendous film.
Booksmart Pro.
That tier of film I will happily sit through. Funny. Good.
Funny.
Woke. It ticks all my boxes.
How are you about dramas with boats in them?
Oh, I love them, mate.
I've
literally never seen Titanic.
Especially in sort of like a bingeable form as we head into the winter
the binge
months.
Ones are the best ones I've found. Binging about barges.
Binging boats.
I'm always up for a barge binge.
Scullion's a big binge eater.
That's why I'm at the doctor's this week.
My chest is compressed.
I know, that's why I've got an elephant on my chest right this minute.
They can't stop eating wham bars. Earlier this year, Neil Druckmann told The Hollywood Reporter that Dever was one of dozens and dozens of actors who'd auditioned for the role of Ellie in this show's first season and got as far as doing a table read. I could also see her as Ellie, that makes a lot of sense. So Caitlin Dever, potentially cast as Abby. Here's the thing, Caitlin Dever, brilliant actress, I think that'd be a solid choice. However, she's no built. I feel like for Abby, you need someone that's built like fucking Rhea Ripley or someone like that. Like, Ethan, when casting Abby and Tilo 2, Do you stick really close to how built she is? Is that important for like the physical dynamic between her and Ellie, or do you have a bit of license? Especially because what's her face, Bella? What's her second name? The last of the plays Ellie.
Ramsey.
Bella Ramsey. Yeah, she's like quite small. She's so yeah. What do you think about this?
Well, first of all, I'm disappointed once again to have been passed over for the role. You know, I really did try. I got quite deep into the
Did you get to the table?
You know, these things happen. I think, I mean, you've got enough creative license because this is real life. This is not a video game. So all you would need to do really is, you know, she doesn't have to be absolutely stacked. I mean, I like your idea of Rhea Ripley doing it. That's cool. But
in a big dirty Australian accent.
Oh yeah,
boy, Ellie.
Yeah, I ain't got that. I mean, you don't have to go. Obviously, she can spend some time working out down the gym to get toned and looking good. Like, you know, this is a huge show with a lot of money. Like, you know, they can get whatever dietitians
they can afford steroids. They can afford.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just some steroid injections and just feed her on a diet of like twigs and pebbles, and you know, she'll get there. I think, you know, you don't need to do. The screen, when it's easy to hide things on screen, like, you know, camera angles could even do it. So I think just a little bit of work just to get some tone on there, and then you've got the dynamic there already. Because like you said, Bella Ramsey's quite small anyway, so you don't need to do huge amounts. I think she's going to be very good in the role. I think it's an exciting pick.
Yeah,
me too. I always thought Florence Pugh was who I would like, but she's like. I say maybe too big for it, but Pedro Pascal is massive, and he's apparently Mr. Fantastic now, so it's a weird situation.
But was Pedro
disappointed to be passed over for Mr. Fantastic as well?
Yeah,
was Pedro Pascal like big guns when he first signed up though?
Well,
I know
he
done
Mandalorian
but it wasn't. You didn't really see his face much.
I was about to say that could be anybody. Yeah. That could be Johnny Binface. Yeah. Although I did look this up because I was curious. He is often actually in the suit, which is fair enough because you wouldn't blame him for just being like, well, it doesn't matter. I can just record it on my phone.
It always makes me laugh when people, when you're horror fans, of which I count myself, always going about who was the best Jason, and it's like, mate, and it's like, I get it. Like some of them have like different movements, but it's like. That could be anyone, mate. Like you don't
big lad in a sack.
I know. Big giant guy with a mask on, jumped on. That could have been Jason at some point.
I was disappointed to be passed over for the role.
So Caitlin Bever,
tubby hockey mask guy running around.
That'd be terrifying.
I've been stopped for an asthma attack.
Caitlin Dever is 5'1" in real life, and in the game, Abby is 5'9". So that's a pretty big difference.
Big platform shoes, like they used to put on The Undertaker.
look, they did this with Tom Cruise and Jack Reacher. Like, you know, these are all things that can be worked around.
Bella Ramsey is like maybe one inch shorter than. They should just shoot it from a massively high angle. Have Bella Ramsey on her knees, like we are shoes attached to her knees, and be like, look how small I am.
Or just like have Abby project strong.
Yeah,
like, you know, you got creative license. I think they're going to be fine. Honestly, I think given the reception of The Last of Us first series, I think they've got a bit of wiggle room.
I agree.
I think people really like the show, and I think they'll go along with it.
The only in The Last of Us, it depends how far they get into season two in terms of like how far into the story of the game. But Ian Alexander, who plays Lev in the game. Wants to play Lev in the show, and it's a weird situation because obviously because of the length of time it takes for games to be made, when this was when the game was motion captured and they were modeled, they were much younger than they are now. Like they're like they look about 20 or something like that, and in the game they're meant to be like 11 or 12. So Ethan, you have experience as an old man playing a teenager. How would you impart wisdom to them for this?
Whenever someone's talking to you, just make your eyes really big, slightly raise the pitch of your voice.
Yeah,
and it helps as well if, like me, you have a baby's face on a man's body. So at which point, just shave your beard, and then you're away.
It's just like an episode of Inside the Actor's Studio. Yeah.
13 years I've been able to keep the charade up.
Oh, speaking of absolute charades, story number three, Wonder Woman job listing suggests it could be, everybody say it together, live service game. As spotted by WCCF Tech. I've never known how to actually say that.
Well, I think if it's WCCF Tech.
As spotted by WCCF Tech, a new job ad lists for a lead software engineer dash gameplay at Monolith, who are making the Wonder Woman game. Quote, join the Wonder Woman team and help bring the iconic DC superhero to life. The listing looks for experience with helping maintain a live software or product. Obviously, this comes in the wake and of big content destroyer of Eater of Worlds, David Zaslav, saying, see all these properties, see your Harry Potters, your Game of Thrones, as your DCs. They should all be billion-dollar games on their own. So it made people worry that this would be a Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League level of, here's your battle pass, plus three to your truth rope, whatever Wonder Woman has, I don't know.
That's a truth rope, that was
truth
it.
Truth rope.
I remember that from the film.
However, there is a world in which this isn't terrible, because some single-player games can incorporate live service elements like new content and updating guns, and it's not five battle passes, and it's not doing your dailies. Chris, are you a cynical man? Do you think this is going to be one of the bad ones?
Yes. Yeah. I'm a cynical man. I wouldn't have been so concerned had your man not been giving it the biggin' last week about it, and that I kind of then...
Big Davey.
Big
Daisy Zavslav.
The big Zavster. after seeing that, I was like, okay. It's weird because it feels like they could... I hope there's time to change their mind if there's backlash to this story, because if they're it's still employing people, especially in a role like lead software engineer, you've got to imagine the game's maybe not massively far along at this stage, even though they announced it like a couple of years ago now. But this could have been a one that they could have released with no live service stuff to get a bit of good. Get back in people's good books again before they then hit you with another one. So that feel like they're missing a trick here if it does end up being live service, because nobody cares that much about Wonder Woman. They'll play it and they'll buy it and play through it, but nobody's going to commit to 6 months of Wonder Woman content coming back on to get a different coloured lasso or whatever.
Truth rope.
My bigger gripe is that I think Monolith Productions and Monolith Soft should get together and one of them agree to change their name, because it's too confusing. Because every time I see Monolith Productions, I think Xenoblade, even though...
Yeah.
So they need to sort that out. That's more pressing to me than...
Rename the company.
Than live service stuff on a game I won't play.
the worry for me, well... I think they might have seen the reaction to Suicide Squad and went, oh no, we cannot show this game at a state of play and it have the big glowing purple orbs on everything, and like it has to be kind of that single player experience that people want. Like the spiritual nous of the Arkham series has just been completely lost by all this crap that they've done in the interim. Ethan, do you expect companies to see the tea leaves in terms of how sour the gaming kind of audience is about live service and try and pivot, or are they going to, they don't back down, the double down?
I mean, not if it's David Zaslav.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, just I think it was either yesterday or the day before, he admitted that the WGA strikes, that everything they wanted was absolutely correct, and yet he still stood against it. I don't like to wish ill on people. I really don't.
Here we go.
I do hope that someone pushes David Zaslav into a puddle.
Off a boat.
A puddle of.
Because it's, I don't know. I mean, I'm with Chris. This is going to be a big box live service game, and it will come out. It probably won't be finished by the time it goes out. It will be a buggy mess. Everyone will play it, and then there'll be some very contemplative post-mortems on YouTube as people talk about it. And then
what went wrong with Wonder Woman?
And then like 4 months down the line, they'll say, oh yeah, you know that roadmap? Yeah, that's not going to happen. We're going to be shutting this down in a couple of months. And then the world will keep turning. A shame that that's what games is now.
Here's the thing I don't get, right? Maybe I'm hoping that we're all wrong about this and it won't be like, because I don't understand how you can live service a game like Wonder Woman. It's got one character. Like, no, I don't see that having multiplayer. I don't understand what there is to unlock other than new outfits and maybe like extra story content. I don't see people committing to if it ends up being single player only. Have there been many single player games with season pass content that's lasted
that's
for
decent.
A reasonable yeah. length of time? It's like, I don't know. I don't see how they could live service it. That's the thing that confuses me.
Yeah, I suppose in the last generation, it felt like if you bought a single player game deluxe edition that had the season pass, it meant you were getting like 3 or 4 actual DLCs,
yeah.
a couple of missions or something, but not just new kind of generic stuff. I don't know how these companies that are making superhero games don't look at the massive success of Spider-Man 1 and 2 and be like, okay, that's actually what we need to do. Like, obviously not everyone's Insomniac, and I'm not saying that people can put out games like with that rapidity, but big single player game, like mass appeal, has got the fan service in there without needing to read 500 comics. Like, that's, if that was what Wonder Woman was, and it was like good, and Monolith are a good studio, they can make a good game. The Monolith in Canada, Chris, not the Monolith in Japan.
Yeah, just being sure.
But this is the problem, because like for a lot of companies now, it's not about creating a good game experience, but it's about recurrent user spending.
Mm.
And like, you know, that's the whole reason the game's designed from the ground up. Like, there's no... Also, I meant to mention this when I was reading the article. There was a little bit at the end that made me genuinely furious.
Here we go.
Yes.
Which is that the new Wonder Woman game is using the Nemesis system.
Yeah.
From Shadow of War games. Piss off with that.
Go on.
Oh my God. Just the fact that they have the copyright to that idea... Oh, it's such a good idea! Let other people funny. Use it!
I think that's funny as fuck. That's like the funniest thing they could possibly do. Is, like, put this legendary like... mechanic in this mid-ass live service game.
Yeah, well, while you've got the corkscrew in my hand, you might as well give it a twist, mightn't you?
I wonder if that would ever stand up in court. Like, if someone just did it and they tried to take them to court, like, imagine the bad PR that would like rain down on. I suppose Zaslav kind of get worse. He's like proper WCW at this point.
But then you know, they could just say it's not called the Nemesis system; it's called the Enemy system, and it's, you know, it's completely different.
I played a bit Shadow of Mordor on a plane last year, and the Nemesis system is still really good, and it's still one of these things that you can't quite see the inner workings. Like, you play enough games and even great mechanics, you can see how they work under the hood, but there's still a wee bit of magic to it. Like, you're just like, oh, I'm in the middle of the battle,
never
and
played
the camera
it,
swings around. Like,
I never played it, but I see a lot of people go on about it. Is it really just no more than you batter somebody and they go, I'll remember you, and then like they come back like later in the game and you go, remember me?
Kind
a
of,
bit,
but
it's like,
it's a bit,
it seems
a bit...
to be more reactive than that. Like, it's just, it seems so organic. And I, like what Jordan said, I don't know how much work went in behind the scenes and how much, you know, voice acting and everything like that and everything that went into it. But it just feels so organic.
Mm.
Yeah, it's like, it'll be, some of them will reference how you killed them the last time, and there's like certain, they all have like fears and stuff like that. So if one of them's fear of bees or something stupid like that and you killed them with bees, they'll come back and be like, there's no bees around here for you to kill me with this time, man, filth.
And what happens at Wonder Woman, the guy will turn up and go, oh, I look who it is, her that hurt me in the arse with the truth rope.
You may have shot me in the head with a purple shotgun with +10 attack damage, but now I am back.
But now I've got a pistol with +12 green damage. So get it up, you Wonder Woman.
Get it up.
Yeah.
We should make the game.
We should be game developers.
Yeah. It's easy.
More reasons why we should be game developers after this break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And we are back with VGC's 30 Under 30 winners, Chris Scullion and Ethan Lawrence. Story number...
for me, is that... never mind. I'm not getting into 30 Under 30 again. That just winds me up because I'm 40 now and I've got no chance.
Look, I've only got about 2 years left and I can only assume that if I don't get it, it'll be personal and I won't blame them.
Next story, under 8 feet.
Yeah. Tiffany & Co. releasing a line of Pokemon jewellery costing up to £29,000. This will be a fun invoice. The new line is a collaboration with contemporary artist Daniel Arsham, who...
Oh, Big Danny's doing it.
Big Danny's on it. He's moving up in the world since doing Menchie's on the side of 61 buses. They worked with Tiffany & Co. in the past. It consists of 9 pieces, each of which contains a pendant shaped like a Pokemon. Charmander, Squirtle, Jigglypuff, there's a fucking Cubone one. My partner absolutely loves Cubone. She has a Cubone tattoo. Right, I'm in trouble here.
That's one of the cheaper ones, I think, though. I think you might be right.
Absolutely, I've got a grand.
Oxidized sterling silver pendants with diamond accents. What's a diamond? Chris, give me a diamond accent.
All right, mate.
There we go.
I thought a diamond geezer accent. I thought you were wrong.
The Pikachu pendant, meanwhile, is made of 18 karat yellow gold with diamond accents. Comes in 2 sizes. A small Pikachu costs 1.5 million yen, roughly 10 grand. The larger one is 4.7 million yen, roughly 29 grand. The best thing about this is they come in absolutely brilliant wee Tiffany-coloured Pokeballs, which I think look really nice. I wish they sold them on their own because I would get one of them. Did you know that Tiffany have a copyright over that specific colour?
Is that sounds weird because they call it a Tiffany Blue Pokeballs, yeah. Tiffany Blues. Did you also know, this is the Game Boy Encyclopedia knowledge coming in, you know my wee fact boxes. Did you know that in the 90s, Mattel tried to trademark Barbie Pink, but never actually successfully did it. So a lot of the games say at the start that Barbie Pink is a trademark, but it isn't.
So, that is actually interesting. There you go. Look at that. That's a reason to buy those books. Exactly. Where can we get that book?
All bookshops, good and bad.
All bookshops.
Okay. So apart, if anyone's wondering what the diamond accents look like on these pendants, it basically looks like battle damage. it looks like they're made of diamond and then they've got like a fleshy layer put over them, like a T-800. And somebody's hit them with like a scatter shotgun and like bits of their flesh have peeled off and there's diamond underneath. That's basically what they look like.
Mm. Ethan, what's the most you've ever spent on jewellery?
Fiverr. I'm not a jewellery guy. I'm not an accessories guy. I'm very very straight down the line with those sorts of things. Just you know,
it's an honest trait. You know what you're getting.
Yeah absolutely. Yeah, I've told this story before, but I've got I have 3 pairs of identical black trousers that I wear on rotation.
Oh mate, I've got the same. I do the same with jeans. If I find a pair I like, I just double up the order because then that's that.
Yep.
I've got no flair. That's my problem.
Mm. Well, what do you walk on, Chris?
That's poor.
Chris, you've got a lot of sovereign rings for your time at the Orange Lodge.
I do.
How often do you wear them?
I do, exactly. Anytime you punch someone's face, you can like just read their history on their forehead.
If you know your history.
Very good. I'm not really a jewellery guy either. I'd spend all my money on just constant branded t-shirts and jumpers.
Good. Speaking of branded t-shirts and jumpers, Pokemon have really they're really making their money this week. Last night I got an email saying that they've done a collaboration with APC, which is like a clothing company for the States, and for a denim jacket with a wee Pikachu on it, it's £280. And it's already sold out.
Could they not just do a collaboration with Elizabeth Duke or like Georgia Asda? Just to give somebody else a chance. Like they did it with Uniqlo for a while, and that was good because it was reasonably affordable. But yeah,
that Xavi stuff's okay, isn't it?
It's not bad, but like, even then, like Xavi are chancers as well. Sorry if Zabia
are
but they always do that. Here's a t-shirt for 20 quid and then they go, here's a deal, 17 quid. And you're like, so yeah, I would like some cheap. But to be fair, like if you're a child, there's plenty of cheap Pokemon merchandise. It's just not a lot for the adults.
Yeah, the stuff that's some of their own stuff on the Pokemon Center is quite nice. I got a Lechonk hat the other day, which I was very, very happy with. Keeps my big head warm.
I've got a question for you, Jordan, about this.
Uh-huh.
There's a quote from Arsham who said, with my latest project with Tiffany, we've recontextualized Pokemon. What do you say to that?
No, you haven't. Thanks.
I'm glad you said that, because I was thinking to myself, you know, I could stick my dick in a can of baked beans and recontextualize breakfast. It doesn't change anything.
I'll take two.
I thought you were going to say which Pokemon you'd like to stick your dick in, but we all know it's Gardevoir. This week, I've been playing. Let me get it out. It's Sheath. For visual people, I've been playing the PlayStation Portal, Chris Scullion's PlayStation Portal. Wow,
tripe.
It looks shit.
It's going to be a fun bit. I'll just charge up.
We have a long review discussion with my good pal and protege, Aaron Bain, on the YouTube channel. You can go and watch. This product has seemed to send people into lead paint fumes based tizzy. People seem to be harboring under the idea that the Jim Ryan army is going to come to your door and demand £200 from you and force you to buy this. It's a remote player. It's a fancy way to do remote play, something you can do on other devices, but if you want to do it on this, God bless you. Chris, why has this caused a shit storm on Twitter?
Because people are unreasonable, and we know this. Like if Sony does something daft, Xbox fans will go to ridiculous extents.
Lovely people.
Xbox do something daft, PlayStation fanboys just go over the top, ridiculous. I'm of the middle ground where I don't get it. So that's as far as I go. I don't get it. I don't hate it. I'm not asking for it to be banned. I just don't want it, and I will never want it, and it will never set foot in my house. Mainly because it doesn't have feet, to be fair.
But it won't darken my door.
No, I mean, it's like, even if they were selling it, if like my dad used to say any time Scotland was playing, they say, if they were playing at my back garden, I'd shut the curtains. if someone was giving me one, I wouldn't take it. I've got zero use for it.
Ethan, the PSP, thoughts?
PSP, it's you know, that was a good console, little nice little handheld.
Mm-hmm.
As for this, gives a shit. Like, it's there's a cost of living crisis going on, and they're selling this tap.
Oh, fuck the cost of living crisis. That's a woke rumor.
You got it for free, you bitch.
I'm a professional. I deserve it.
Deserve!
Here's the thing.
What things that people deserve? Let's talk about that.
Okay, let's do it. What?
genuinely, BGC is going to get an invoice for that stupid Pokemon Tiffany perfume.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you better believe it.
Not just that. Here's the thing. Yes, it is for a lot of people, it is a who cares, I can't use it, what's the point situation. Agreed. If you have a TV that you're the master and commander of, that you can just play whenever you want, and you have a setup, fine. However, even just in the day since it's been out, I've seen a lot of people being like, my partner's watching some shite on the telly, and I'm playing this, and it's good. And yeah, I know that's like
it's great because I don't have a phone.
I don't like doing stuff like that on my phone, not least because I've dropped it so much that it's absolute crack city, but
no,
it's very,
he's run out of words, he's got nothing, he can't defend this.
I wrote like 1,000 words about it, mate. It's a very slick piece of hardware, and the same way that it's exactly like the PlayStation VR 2. It's from a hardware perspective,
another piece of tat that I'm not gonna buy.
But from a hardware perspective, you can't talk shit about it because it's very well made.
I don't doubt the quality of it. It looks like a premium product, and I don't doubt that £200 is going to £200 worth of product. I don't think it's a ripoff or anything. I think it, for what it does and for what it's worth and for what it gets, the money it costs what it should cost. I just don't see 99.9% of people having a use for it.
Yeah, I tend to agree. However, It's completely sold out in the UK and in most of the US. So
it's because they only made 10.
Well, that's the thing.
You've got one.
One, how many did they make? Two, how many people bought this thinking it was like an actual portable, like a Switch or something like that? Which leads me on to my next point. I would love them to make an actual portable again, because just from playing this, see if it was a bit chunkier at the back to accommodate, like, you're not, maybe like Steam Deck level power. You're not going to get PS5 level power or anything like that, because it'd be about 50 grand. But
the only thing that would get me tempted by it is if you were able to stream games from PS Plus on it.
Yeah.
But they will never do that, because people just buy that instead of a PS5 and save 200 quid. So they'll never, as much as we did stories about them, like saying, oh, we'll look into that, it won't happen. It won't be a thing, because people will just buy a PlayStation Plus subscription and that instead of a PS5. It won't happen. So that's the only thing that would get me into it. I don't see the point in just being remote play only, because I can do that already. If it added extra an extra thing that let me actually play PS Plus stuff in bed or whatever without having to have my PlayStation 5 on downstairs, then I'd be up for it.
Yeah. I'm curious, if you're listening to this good pod and you either have or want a portal, tell us why. What do you think about it generally? What would you like to see from an actual PlayStation portable handheld situation?
And then we'll randomly pick one winner, and Jordan will send you his PlayStation portal.
I certainly won't, mate. I've got squad building challenges to do. I've got squad battles matches to complete. I won a game of the week, Chris. I won a game of the weekend league on this thing. So the delay is very good. It's a good week.
I'm dipping out of FIFA. I'm trying my very, very best, but live is another live service in it, and I can't. I'm losing track.
It is my live service. It's the only one I do, really. And even me, Johnny FIFA, I just got to the point where it was Sunday night there, and I was like, oh, I'm away to London tomorrow. Can I be bothered sitting and playing 20 games of the weekend league? And I just didn't bother. And then the next day I was like, okay. That's exactly how it breaks. As soon as you miss one of your appointments and you don't care about that's how the spell has been broken. Speaking of, very briefly, I was in London and had some of the worst train experiences of my life. Avanti West Coast, you're a shower of bastards. You're incompetent to the point of parody. You shouldn't be allowed to run your company. I hope you all go out of business. This is VGC stance on Avanti West Coast. Useless.
For balance, I went up to Glasgow recently, also on West Coast Avanti, and I've got to say, better than LNER. I'm not saying it's good. I am saying it's better than LNER.
Mm. Yeah, my train back was fine. However, the train there, leave Glasgow, and it's like, okay, you're going to leave Glasgow, and when you get to Crewe, you're going to swap trains, and then that takes you straight through to London Euston. You'll be there for the back at 8. I'll leave at about 3 o'clock. First of all, get to Central. The place is packed. There's no one ever queues properly. We are British. We voted to stay British, so we should know how to queue. No one can fucking queue to save their life. Then when we get on the train, I have a seat. Seat's booked, and I know exactly where I'm sitting. I'm sitting somewhere with a laptop, so I can sit and write Call of Duty guides all the way down to London, because I'm a sad, sad man. Someone's sitting in my seat, and I say to them, oh, that's my seat. And they're like, oh, there's nothing on the wee, like the little screen that shows, like, is this seat available? It's just blank. And I show them my ticket, and I'm like, no, this is actually my seat. And they go, oh, okay then. I was like, no, this is my seat. There are seats elsewhere on this train, but this is actually my seat. Don't act as if I'm inconveniencing you. First of all, you sat down there about 2 fucking seconds ago. It's not as if you've been sitting here since Aberdeen. That was bad enough. And then we get somewhere in England, some poxy, smelly Brexit town, and they go, oh, this train's broke, we need to get you on another one. Get on another train to some other place, and then it comes over the tannoy, and it's like, this train's actually turning round and going back to Glasgow, so if you want to get to London, get off the train. I only hear this because someone else says it to me, because it's so quiet. It's like, if you want to get to London, get off this train and go to another platform. So at this point, I'm pissing sweat. The guides are half done because I cannot sit anywhere on my laptop. And then when I get on this train, the snoringest, smelliest man is sitting next to me. And I eventually get into London at 1:01 PM. Avanti West Coast, shower of bastards.
In their defense, I would say that the people queuing wasn't their fault. The smelly man wasn't their fault. I'll fault them for not displaying the seat reservations. That sometimes does happen. and obviously the faulty train was clearly the main issue there. I would strike them down for about 50% of the ailments you are accusing them of.
Still not
optimal conditions for public travel, but regardless.
I knew you would take their side. I knew you're always the man that takes the side of the big corporation.
I'm always the train bootlicker.
Yeah, it was in London.
The pocket of big train.
Big train.
Chew, and indeed chew. Yeah, I was in London. I can tell you why next week. But it was, I mean, it was London. It was rainy. I had a Nando's that was decent. That's the highlight of my trip. That's not true. I can tell you about the highlight of my trip next week. Chris, tell me about this big stupid Atari you've got.
You mean this big stupid Atari?
Oh, here we go. Can we fit it in the frame? There it is.
Oh!
Very nice.
It's all right. I mean, like just for full kind of clarification for those who don't know me, I'm very much a retro man. That's
my thing. I can't believe it. Retro
video games. I'm also a big Atari fan. Some people's retro love goes as far back as like PlayStation or SNES or even NES, but I'll go all the way back to Atari because that was like my dad had an Atari before I was born, so that was like one of the first things I played. So. I've still got our kind of six switch Atari 2600 here, so I love Atari. This is very much for people like me and nobody else. It literally is a modern Atari 2600 with an HDMI out. So when you turn it on, nothing happens unless there's a cartridge in it. And when you put a cartridge in it, which is a great thing, it plays old cartridges. So I've got all these games from like 40 years old. I've got like Space Invaders on the Atari and. Mm-hmm. Empire Strikes Back on Atari.
Oh, nice.
The worst port of Pac-Man imaginable on Atari. those all work on it, which is... So there's some kind of magical about a game that's, like, older than me, like, suddenly working, like, on something that's not out yet. It's amazing. But it's playing an Atari game, and that's it. There's no... It's running on emulation, but you can't bring up a menu for, to put a filter on it or to save your state or to do any of the stuff you would expect from an emulator these days because it's so stubborn that it wants to pretend it's like an Atari 2600. So it's like, if you've got like loads of old Atari cartridges in the loft, brilliant, batter in. Otherwise, you're better with something like Atari 50 because that at least puts everything in context and says, here is why you should give a shit about this game. Because this is what it meant, blah, 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 blah. Now you just get like a cartridge with 10 games on it and they're all just blocks. And if you're like a modern player, you're like, this is all just blocks, this is shit. Without the context, it's like, it assumes prior knowledge, basically. So it's fine, but it's a very, very, very niche. Oh, much like the PlayStation Portal, but with a far fairer 3 out of 5 review.
Can the Atari play Bloodborne, you fucking bastard? Ethan, we spoke about it earlier in the show. Tell us more about Ethan Lawrence's Big Boat Bonanza.
That's his name as well. This was something that I shot last year while also doing Horrible Histories. It was a very busy time of my life. Boat Story, it's a drama for BBC One. It's Two Brothers Productions, who are the people behind The Tourist. Watched that. I pretty much covered it at the beginning. Daisy Haggard and Patterson Joseph in the lead. I'm also hanging around at the back there, as per. I've seen episodes 1 and 2. It is, I will pre-warn people, it's quite weird and extremely graphic.
Hell yeah.
I have no idea how the BBC One audience are going to react to it. but we will see. people turn up for Two Brothers stuff, so we'll see. But I think it's absolutely, based on 1 and 2, I think it's brilliant.
Are you involved in any of the graphic stuff, or do you discover the graphic stuff?
I'm not going to say. That would be a spoiler, Chris Scullion.
What a rat.
I shan't be drawn on it. Okay. I shan't be drawn.
I suppose we're going to have to tune in to see, aren't we? Make sure my aerial's pointing in the right direction.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Set up your VCR.
I look forward to getting a very threatening letter from the license fee people saying that you don't have a license fee. Why are you watching this program? They'll be like, I know him, mate. It's fine. It's fine. I text the star.
That's fine. You're only stealing food from my children's mouth. That's fine.
Nah, I don't care. at any point do you come in and warn people that you're going to give them the long arm of the law?
At least I think 4 or 5 times an episode I do that.
So much for not spoiling it.
I'm a journalist, mate. I get to the heart of the situation. I ask the questions.
Yeah, not like you, Scully.
It's His catchphrase is "Don't eat those beans."
Ethan's scenes, were the only ones that, Ethan's scenes were the only ones that were filmed in front of a live studio audience, so every time he says that, everyone goes, hey!
Like I said, it's very weird, very jarring.
Everyone in the audience is nudging each other, saying, they shagged those beans. That's the joke.
It's funny because he violated Hines.
What time can we watch your bean shagging exploits?
So the first episode comes out on this Sunday, which is the 19th. Of November?
Correct.
Why are you asking me? I don't choose. Is it the 19th? Remember?
Yeah, Sunday the 19th. So that's 9 p.m. on BBC One, and then episode two comes out Monday, 9 p.m. Mm-hmm. BBC One. And then it will keep doing that for 3 weeks. In addition, it will drop on the iPlayer in its entirety, I think, day and date of the 19th. So if you know, if you don't fancy waiting, if you're more of a binge kind of character, you can watch it that way as well. Well, very exciting. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to promote it without being too mean to me.
Mate, we just called you a bin shagger for most of it, so I wouldn't worry about it. You can expect a full review on VGC, Chris will be on that, doing it episode by episode, full breakdowns, a full special podcast, talking boats, which I'm looking forward to coming
talking
soon.
Boats.
Another great Acast production. Can I say any more for any more this week?
Yeah, I've got about 20 minutes worth of Evercade discussion if you want to hear that.
Let's all just sit and listen to
it. Let's just listen. So basically, I'll set it up. The new Evercade spin-off handhelds, the Super Pocket, they're coming out soon.
Look at that.
Very nice. There's one that's got Taito games on it and one that's got Capcom games on it. And then there's a cartridge slot in the back for Evercade cartridges. So people might not be familiar with Evercade and the like, so... I had a chat with Sean Cleaver, who's the managing kind of director of Evercade, and had a chat about it while trying my very best not to make it sound like an advert. So I have provided 20 minutes of audio, roughly, which will now be bolted onto the end of this podcast in a haphazard manner so that people curious about the retro scene may listen, and people who aren't interested and flick me the Vicky V's and put it off now. But I hope you stick around because it's a nice wee chat.
Flicking someone the Vicky, I've not heard that in a wee while. I like it. There's something good about that, although it feels a bit fucking, it feels a bit Brexit, it feels a bit West Ham.
And also, that means like peace in some places as well. So like people do it in like, I don't want to say Japan, because I think Japan still do peace the other way around, but I think like doing it like that actually still counts as peace in some places. I'm just not sure where.
Peace and love. I'm warning you with peace and love. No more fan mail. Okay, let's get out of here. We've got places to be. I've got boats to go and write about. And I've got a very, 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 very briefly. I went to a gashapon shop in London and got this little Kirby. He's a car. This is a video. This is a video feature. Kirby, can you see that?
Car. Yeah, it's like
he's a little car.
He certainly is a car.
I can confirm that's a car.
Thank you, journalist, for confirming that is indeed a car. You can send comments, questions, and concerns to podcast at videogameschronicle.com. I sat and talked to the Second Wing Gang, aka Yahtzee himself. It's on YouTube. It's also on this podcast feed. That was good fun.
It was a very good interview. I listened to it before we came on today.
I appreciate it. He had his wee dog underneath. He was talking the entire time, like just rubbing his wee dog. And I was like, oh, okay, I respect him. He's a respectable man. Not his 17 years of work, just the fact that he has a dog. Check that out on YouTube. Go and check out the Second Wind guys. Although they don't fucking need it at this point. They're making about £1 billion a month on Patreon. So good job, Gamers Group. Absolute belter there. VGC_news on TikTok. Follow me on Twitter at Jordan Midler. Follow Chris on Twitter at Scully1888. Follow Ethan on Twitter at Conservatives. So we will be back next week with what I was down in London doing. Thank you to Grant Kirkhope for the VGC podcast theme. Say goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Chris.
Say goodbye, Ethan.
At Ethan D. Lawrence, boat story.
Boat story, boat story, boat story. Stick around for our extended interview and we will see you next week.
I am here with Sean Cleaver, the marketing manager at Blaze Entertainment. Sean, thank you very much for coming on the VGC podcast, even though, let's face it, you're just here to punt some stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I might be a familiar face to a very, very small niche of people, but I've gone from reviewing stuff to plugging stuff, as we all do from time to time in this industry.
Absolutely. The vast majority of us like ditch the journalism game at some point and move on to the PR game, which, I've not made the jump yet. How are you finding that? Do you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah, no, there's a lot of transferable skills, I think, in the creative aspects of what you do with writing and what you find about the games and the way that you interact with them, that you kind of did the same when you're marketing them and doing PR for them as well. So there's a lot of ability to apply yourself creatively to what you do, which is what we kind of always did from journalism and writing and critique and anything of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we are here today to discuss the Hyper Mega Tech Super Pocket, which almost sounds like a Street Fighter name. There are two of those, and anyone watching in the video podcast, I'm now holding them up to prove that I have actually...
As am I.
Oh,
I came prepared, of course.
Both dual fisting. There's a Capcom edition with, I believe, 12 games on it, and a Taito edition with 18 games on it. These, obviously, the Taito one's got like Space Invaders, Bubble Bobble, New Zealand Story, that sort of thing. And the Capcom one's got your Street Fighters, your Final Fights, your Mega Mans. One of each, not multiple ones. What was the thinking behind releasing these kind of standalone handhelds?
Well, we've done quite a lot of work over the last 4 or 5 years in the retro gaming space, from Atari to Evercade to everything else that we've produced. And our focus has always been on physical and recreating that physical classic gaming experience as we've done with Evercade. And what we found as well is that there's a space in the market effectively for these kind of smaller devices that have what people remember and what people like as built-in games, but also have that curation of the odd thing that you maybe didn't know, which, you know, you'll find a little bit more of on the Taito Super Pocket than you probably would do the Capcom one. Yeah. But there's an element of that being a market that's kind of been unaddressed for a while. There's a lot of $30 to $40 devices that exist that are one or two games of a familiar franchise. And that's about it until you get to effectively what Evercade is at about £100. So we knew there was a space in the middle where we could bring what's missing from those smaller and lower end of the market devices with the quality that we've been able to produce on Evercade, and with the stuff that, it's that old conversation, isn't it, when you get home from the arcade and you play a game and it's like, oh, it's not like the arcade version. And we basically said, well, we can do that now.
Yeah.
So let's bring it in at this point.
Yeah. So are you kind of basically targeting, excuse me, a completely different audience to Evercade then, which is why it's a different brand, instead of calling it like the Evercade Go or the Evercade Pocket or something like that? Are you like targeting a completely different audience?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things with retro gaming, and I mean, as you know, being a very keen historian around retro games, is that there is various different niches of various different people who like various different things. As we said, Evercade's mission being more about the physical and the experience and the nostalgia that we used to have for that has become its own kind of behemoth and ecosystem now. So to then introduce something completely different in that space kind of goes against what that brand does, what it kind of stands for, and the audience is curated. And that's not to say that any of these products are not available for anybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody can pick up a Super Pocket, everybody can pick up an Evercade, and the two will eventually Venn diagram into each other for some people.
Yeah.
But the main point of it was, there's a lot of people who like retro games, love retro games, or certainly arcade games especially, that will always have the memories of Street Fighter 2 and various different titles like that, but just won't have the time, the effort, the ability, or the care to really invest in a more expensive solution, a quick-to-play solution, or anything that involves collecting a lot more different things. So having something that's sort of like in your hand, no fuss, no drama, kind of became its own brand of its own making, really. It became its necessity for it to be its own thing, so that the message doesn't cross and dilute, and we're able to bring our expertise then to retro gaming in general, and not just we can do one thing, we can do this thing.
Yeah. This is like the first of my annoying questions. obviously, if the Super Pocket is aimed at I don't want to say I hate the word casual, so like less kind of...
I have a different term for you on that, and it's called short-term play.
Oh, yes.
Well, it's very buzzwordy.
It's very buzzwordy.
But it's the thing. It is a dirty word, casual, and it's not about that. Because when we think about casual games, and mobile gaming especially is ascribed to this a lot, what you're actually talking about is being able to enjoy a game, fulfilled in that game for a very short period of time, like a commute, like on the sofa or anything else, and it could be anything up to 20 minutes to an hour. And that's not casual, because people are playing these regularly, and as we've seen from all the stats that we get from Yuki, they're some of the most diverse in who plays them and how they're played. Mm-hmm. And it's not really casual, it's just a shorter form of gaming.
Yeah, absolutely. But essentially, so these Super Pockets, will they have stuff like firmware updates, or is that stuff that's not kind of on the cards for the audience?
Well, the plan is that we wanted to make them completely able to be used as they are, which they are. And there's always going to be, with any kind of mass production thing, something that we might be able to change, or we might be able to improve the experience, or we'll get feedback. So we've kind of built in a system much like the original Evercade had, which was you connect it via USB to your computer, you download and install it, and it will just flash up the new stuff in there.
Okay.
And that'll be fine. And it'll be mainly for very essential bugs and fixes, or something, you know, that's cropped up, you know, that we've missed in anything. But
can I make one request, just as an absolute idiot? It's to be very niche, because there's probably not a lot of people who do this, but I do. When I was playing Street Fighter, every time I've ever played Street Fighter on a console, I've always mapped the strong buttons to like the face buttons. So the option just to reassign my controls would be nice, but I appreciate that.
It's one of the things we looked at and we decided not to bring initially to this, and I don't think we've got any plans to bring it, but we'll of course get feedback of it's not the buttons I remember and it's not the way, because you know, the form factor changes and stuff like that. I mean, one of our main points on those kind of things is, can you hit Hadouken easily? The answer is normally yes, even in hyper fighting, which is I think the hardest Street Fighter 2 game that there is. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that we didn't really intend to bring it. And Street Fighter is probably the only game built into any of these devices that really has more than two or three controls. It might be one of those things that maybe we bring a couple of like presets or something like that, if we've got the ability to. It's not currently planned, but you know, with feedback and everything else, and if the call for it is large, then it's certainly something we'll look at and investigate.
Cool. Obviously, Hyper Mega Tech is the brand, Super Pocket is a product in this brand. Does that mean we can expect more Hyper Mega Tech stuff in the future?
Unequivocally, yes.
Okay. And will that mean more Super Pockets, or like other stuff?
Yeah, the plan is to do more Super Pockets in future. We're hoping that as a brand, that becomes a bit of a line that we can attach to arcade and possibly some non-arcade things that come down the line. But as I said, with Evercade being its own thing and having such an identity, launching this new brand with Hyper Mega Tech gives us the ability to kind of spread our wings out of that, come up with cool ideas that we wouldn't have been able to do within Evercade, and keep it all within a family where you could recognize the people behind it are the people that made Evercade or Blaze or Hyper Mega Tech. And then that becomes synonymous, hopefully, with the quality of the emulation that we provide, the build quality that we provide, for the value that we can list these products at.
Yeah, cool. So obviously, moving on to the Evercade side of things, you had the Evercade and the Evercade versus the Evercade EXP. I always want to say EXP, even though it's clearly not what it's called.
Everybody wants to say versus when it's technically VS was our internal code.
Oh, really?
It's like
bros or brothers, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where we just chose the names that were just the most awkward to say in any particular way.
The next one could be the Evercade Aluminium or Aluminium. So that's like three kind of major hardware releases in 3 years. Like, is there how far does the roadmap go? Are there going to be more iterations, or is the EXP the flagship for now?
Well, at the moment, the EXP is the flagship, and we'll always look at Evercade and what we can bring to that experience. So the VS being the primary way to play 1080p gaming on your TV through our cartridges, the EXP being more handheld and certainly very much iterated and improved handheld device compared to the original handheld. There's always going to be room for more hardware, and one of the things that we know, the best way to get into any kind of ecosystem is that there's got to be new hardware. You know, and that's, we talk about modern consoles having a mid-cycle refresh. I mean, half of that is probably to just get a lot of those people that had missed or wanted to cross the streams from one console to another and bring them into their ecosystem. So at the same kind of time, there are plans for the next 2 to 3 years on software and hardware for Evercade and Hyper Megatech. EXP is still going to be the primary, certainly, because it is the core experience of which most people play, discovered. And it's going to, you know, potentially iterate, maybe have special editions or anything else like that. We're always keeping everything open to what really people want out of our devices as opposed to what we can provide. Yeah. But the more you launch hardware, the more people see it because people love the hardware. You know, when it comes to retro games, unless you're doing something special like we're doing with remastering Duke Nukem 1 and 2, it's very difficult to go, hey, we've got all of these games because everybody's got quite a various amounts of games. We just have to sell the hardware and sell the package at the same time.
Yeah. With the current Evercade systems, it seems pretty clear there's a kind of there's a ceiling as to like what kind of systems it can emulate, because obviously it seems like PlayStation is about as far as it can go power wise. Is there ever any kind of plan or desire to kind of bump that up a bit so you can start getting PlayStation 2 stuff, or does that become tricky in terms of legally emulating these things as well, not just in terms of power but in terms of Sony going, hold on a minute?
Well, I think there's a trio of problems when it comes to going past the 32-bit systems. We certainly will be bringing games from that era that are not 32-bit, certainly looking at other options around that space of the consoles that were released at the time. Mm-hmm. But there's three real issues. One of them is the tech available to do that? And is it available at a price that, you know, can be mass produced to that point of view and actually have that kind of quality? I mean, a lot of devices out there at the moment are £300 to £400, maybe £100 to £200 in trying to emulate PS2, GameCube, and a lot of that era stuff.
Yeah.
And even then, it's hit and miss about what's supported, what's not supported, given the volume of the library. Mm-hmm. The other issue is the size of those games and having a way to actually bring those to any kind of console, really, because you're running into DVD drives, so you're running into anything that can be up to 4 gigabytes in space, especially when you take video and music. And then finally, you've got the issue of rights. And that's not just the rights of BIOSes, the rights of the games, it's the rights of music, that's the rights of likenesses, it's the rights of brands and everything else that might be in there. And that depends on the license deals that were signed at the time, whether things need to be redone. I mean, obviously, we've just had a new RoboCop game. And, you know, I think we could probably all imagine that there's going to be a lot of issues with rights as to who gets paid for what at what point in that. Yeah. So you do start straying onto harder territory, certainly for a third party like ourselves, to go and license a lot of these games and be able to have a technological way to bring them. It's a lot easier for somebody who owns the games already outright. So, you know, Konami doing the Metal Gear Solid collection, it's obvious it's going to be easy for them to bring those games.
Yeah. But,
from our side, it makes it a little bit more tricky unless you're completely got everything that you need from a partner licensing wise, as we can probably tell from the last 30, 40 years of games preservation. Doesn't really exist that well, does it?
Speaking of licensing and preservation, like obviously, like you say, a number of these games from the past had licenses or kind of endorsements attached to them, and there have been some kind of Evercade titles that have had to be tweaked a bit to remove those. Obviously, the Pico collection had quite a few. I think it had like Barclay Shut Up and Jam became Hoops Shut Up and Jam, and Mike Ditka was dropped from Power Football, and I think Brutal Sports Football became Beastball. Like, does a tiny piece of your heart break every time like this has to be done? Because obviously the whole point is preservation, and on one hand you want to make these games playable to the people who remember them back in the day and maybe don't care if the name's changed, but on the other hand, like, any kind of slight tweak to it is instantly not making it the original product. Is it kind of a tricky balance?
It is a tricky balance, and I think certainly with the Evercade audience, there's an air of understanding of why that can't happen for a lot of things. And as you say, image rights, name rights, and stuff like that will often crop up in a lot of these games. And the fact that a company like Pico has been able to bring back so many of these games without that licensing and have them working is actually a good testament to preservation. You know, the actual games themselves and the experience of them is still there. I wouldn't say it necessarily breaks my heart in any way, shape, or form, because what it does is it evokes that nostalgia tick in your brain where it just goes, oh, I do remember when it was that and it was cool. But you also remember certainly 16-bit outside of name on the box. You're probably not going to see a very accurate representation of Charles Barkley when you're actually playing the game, for example. It's like that is more about the gameplay experience at the time. So you kind of get wrapped back into that in a way as well. I mean, there's obviously some things that are locked behind licenses that, you know, we can't get or we struggle to get or we'll try and get. And a lot of this, when it comes to licenses, even for stuff that's licensed, is just right place, right time, not just for us to the publisher, but the publisher to us as well, if it's in their interest to do it.
Yeah. So no Shaq Fu anytime soon?
Possibly, who knows? I mean,
we'll just rename it Basketball Foo. Just to give out.
I was thinking you were going to shout out WWE games at me.
Oh, no, I know that's an odd starter right away. There's absolutely no chance. So there's like 45, although I don't know how many people would want like an LJN collection anyway, given the general.
You would be surprised given the amount of...
although I'd imagine the LJN is the biggest non-starter anyway, considering pretty much every game they released was licensed. So
it is quite difficult to do stuff like that. But then that's also the other argument of preservation as well, which is you've got to preserve everything if you're going to preserve it. You can't just preserve the good stuff. And, you know, LJN stuff has got a reputation for what it is. We published Sword of Sodan, which was an early title that EA originally published. And the Mega Drive version is consistently rated as one of the poorer versions of that game. But there's fun to be had there and for people to play it. And you can't curate a collection or do these things without saying, well, here's some of the things you probably don't remember, or here's the thing you probably rented and wish you could have taken back. But now's your opportunity to actually get into it, or now's the opportunity to understand a bit more about it with the hindsight of 30 plus years gaming or whatever it is that somebody has.
I mean, you're talking to the biggest Night Trap fan on the planet, so you're preaching to the converted. Like
Night Trap did the full 180 of suddenly becoming cool because of it, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
There are other games out there coming out that have got exactly the same treatment. So. Yeah.
They all count. Finally, like I think there's 45 cartridges out just there. I don't know if that's the exact number.
Yeah, we're going to hit at the end of this month, so the end of November, as we're speaking, 51.
Excellent.
So that's basically 51, I think, across all of our devices, if you count bonus games, built-in stuff, and not including the Super Pocket, there's well over 500 games in that whole ecosystem, which is a far cry from the 10 cartridges we started out 3 years ago.
That's a decent chunk. Obviously, I'm not expecting you to announce brand new, like unannounced things, but how like far ahead have you got like planned for unannounced stuff? Are there deals done for like a long time in the future, or maybe 6 months in the future? Like, what does the kind of roadmap confirmed look like?
We kind of go at least one full year into the future with an air of another couple of years. So, for example, if we've got a collection where we have more than one collection, we'll try and spread them out over those 2 year periods so you're not overwhelmed with them within a short space of time. So there's always going to be a little hangover of a deal that we originally signed on when that game then comes out later. But we always try to work a year, partly for our development cycle, production cycle, and shipping cycle forever. With these things that we need to give a good amount of time for these things, but also as well so that we can make sure that we've got something secure for the future. I mean, I can say that we have. I mean, we've said publicly, I think about 90% of 2024 is signed, sealed, delivered, or contracts in hand. I think they're a good mix of what we like to always bring, classic home console games that everybody loves, arcade greats, indie gems that we find by helping the homebrew scene bring itself up to a place where it can be physically published and enjoyed by a group of hungry people that want all new games. So there's definitely more of the same with the volume turned up a bit in 2024, and that's saying something given that we've got Duke Nukem coming out in less than a few weeks.
That's crazy. Obviously everyone has the dream game they'd love to see on something like this, and I don't want you taking the easy way out by saying Nintendo stuff, because we know Nintendo stuff will never happen and stuff like that. But realistically, is there a title in your head that you would love to see on there that in some day in the future may actually be possible and isn't a non-starter?
Oh well, all of the Super Mario games. No, I mean, I'm always going to go to my go-to things of OutRun. You know, it's one of my favorite arcade games. It's one of the games I collect personally. So, you know, I'd love to have some of those. I'd love to get some of the Bullfrog stuff if there is a way to get that in future, and some of the early Codemasters races. I'd love to see more strategy come to Evercade, and that doesn't necessarily have to be a particular game or anything that's getting more publishers on board that did a lot of stuff. And I also think I would quite like to bring more games that weren't necessarily known or big in Europe. So we managed to do that with the Renovation Collection, where we had games like Gaia S, Soldies, El Viento, and games that a lot of people loved and importers loved, but they were never released in Europe. They were only released in the US and Japan. So our release was the first time those games have been officially released in any capacity in Europe. So I'd love to be able to bring more games that were region specific, even if they do not need translations into people. Because there's so many retro games. There's so many. And, you know, I would love to bring out one, but in the meantime, there's a lot more that I enjoy that I could bring. And I think everybody on our team has their own love from different generations, be it home computer, be it 16-bit, 32-bit, and even the fact that we can do games natively now where we're doing modern indie games that we can, engine depending, bring to Evercade. Yeah. It opens up the doors to a lot more possibilities.
Awesome. That's a very nice way to end this conversation. So Sean Cleaver, Marketing Manager at Blaze Entertainment TM, thank you very much for coming on the VGC podcast.
Thank you for having me.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.